Plain and simple, it's corruption.
Why are they vaccinating our children? Because once it's on the vaccine, once it's on the childhood schedule, they are no longer liable for injury. So they're going to get off that EUA, put it right on the childhood vaccine schedule, and then have no liability going forward.
So I'm going to have to read you a quick little news story out of Vietnam. Just got this today. A ninth grader in the northern province of Phu Tho died Tuesday after getting her second Pfizer vaccine dose, the local medical center said Thursday. The girl had gotten her first Pfizer dose on December 3rd, 2021, after which she experienced dizziness and had difficulty breathing. She was taken to a medical center for treatment and later recovered. She had her second dose last Monday. Her mother told healthcare workers about the girl's side effects following her first shot, but they asked her to get the second shot anyway. Again, this is a ninth grader. Doesn't have much risk from COVID. Has a reaction to the first dose, but let's give her the second dose anyway. 20 minutes following the second shot, the girl experienced tightness in her chest, dizziness, difficulty in breathing, and seizures. She received emergency treatment on the spot before being transferred to a district medical center. On arrival, she began to vomit blood, fell into a coma, and her heart stopped. Her family received news that she died Tuesday morning. Now, I guess this isn't evidence that a death might be related to the vaccine, but it certainly would concern me more than it's concerned Dr. Fauci, Dr. Lewinsky, Dr. Collins, Dr. Woodcock, Dr. Marks. I know one of your favorites, Brian. This is reality. This is a reality that's being ignored by our federal health officials, by the legacy media.
But every patient is a new textbook. Every patient is a unique human being that has unique factors that only we and the patient really understand with sufficient depth to make difficult medical judgments. And this is the first time in my career, I think the other clinical physicians in the room would agree, where I've worried about, is somebody going to be looking over my shoulder asking me why I've prescribed fluvoxamine for this indication rather than that indication? I prescribe it for depression, no problem. Are you giving this to treat COVID? Why should it matter to you? So you're saying
this is the first time in your
The last 2 years.
Is that true?
The last 2 years. Now, there are things that hospital administrators do that have annoyed physicians for years, but the kind of hamstringing of physicians in terms of doing what we believe to be the right and best and good for this vulnerable patient in front of me right now, that is my only responsibility as a physician, this patient who has placed their trust in me as their physician to do what is best for them and not be acting as the agent of a social program or a state program or any other interest that could compromise.
So I can tell you what happened to me. So I was using our protocol to treat critically ill patients in the ICU with a whole host of repurposed drugs. This is a memo sent to the entire healthcare system, but they targeted me personally. And what did this memo say? This said I can use remdesivir. And then I will quote, there was an added section, do not endorse section, which includes medications that may cause harm and efficacy is not supported in peer-reviewed published RCTs. These medications will not be verified or dispensed for the prevention or treatment of COVID. This list includes ivermectin, bicalutamide, etoposide, fluvoxamine, dutasteride, and finasteride. And then just to stick it to me, they added ascorbic acid.
Otherwise known as...
The system was effectively preventing me treating my patients according to my best clinical judgment. And then how did this progress? I objected. So the first week I was in the ICU, I didn't know what to do. What was I to do? My hands were tied. As a clinician, for the first time in my entire career, I could not be a doctor. I could not treat patients the way I had to be to treat patients. I had 7 COVID patients, including a 31-year-old woman. I was not allowed to treat these people. I had to stand by idly. I had to stand by idly watching these people die. I then tried to sue the system. And you know what they did? They did something called peer sham review. It is a disgusting and evil concept. They then accused me of 7 most outrageous crimes that I had committed, and that I was such a severe threat to the safety of patients, they immediately suspended my hospital privileges because I possessed and posed such an outright threat to these patients, ignoring the fact that under my care, the mortality was 50%, those of my colleagues. I then went on through the sham peer review. I went to a kangaroo court where they continued this, and the end result was I lost my hospital privilege and was reported to the National Practitioner Data Bank. So here I was standing up for patients' rights, and this hospital, this evil hospital, ended my medical career. So that's what they do. It's an outright outrage. It's evil to the core.
You can use safe, effective, off-label drugs for other conditions outside COVID.
Absolutely. Yeah. If this was pneumococcal pneumonia, this wouldn't be an issue. This is specifically for COVID.
I'm still a nurse, but I was fired from Houston Methodist. I'm the one you might have seen all over the news. We were the first one mandated with the COVID shot. So I blew it up on the national media. We have a huge state and federal lawsuit because we didn't want to be guinea pigs. We saw for ourselves in the hospital people coming in with adverse reactions after getting the Pfizer shot. And the crazy thing is let me tell you a couple things about Methodist Hospital down in Houston, Texas. When they first started with COVID, I did that COVID unit on and off the whole time till they fired me in June, right? They started the first 2 months with hydroxychloroquine. They actually used it in the hospital. Then they cut it back real quick, switched it to remdesivir and all these other expensive drugs. And we're like, why? And we would ask these doctors. No one could give us a reason. They just said, well, the hospital policy changed. But they didn't know why. And you know, most of those doctors in that hospital would not even go in those COVID rooms. There was maybe 2 that would. They would stand outside, make us dress up head to toe, and go in with an iPad. So the only form of communication those doctors would have at Houston Methodist with the COVID patients was through an iPad. So literally, we'd go in there, they'd be talking to them, never assess the lungs, never look at them, nothing, go to discharge them. I would come back out and be like, no, have you listened to them? They can't breathe. Like, the wheezing's horrible. They had no clue.
80% of us are misdiagnosed with anxiety initially, and then months down the road, we get appropriate diagnoses. And that's when we are able to find doctors that are actually willing to go against the directive. Because like these physicians were discussing, their licenses have been threatened. And because their licenses have been threatened, we cannot get medical care. They are afraid to treat us. We have had patients who are severely injured and are dying who cannot get in the door to get seen by physicians because physicians are afraid of the word COVID vaccine. So instead, what they're doing is they've made us, like Kyle Warner and myself, and our membership of over 12,000 COVID vaccine injured, we are ground zero to take care of the COVID vaccine injured when we have highly qualified practitioners across the globe that have been silenced and threatened if they even so much as see us for what's going on.
There is the father of a boy here in this room who's died of myocarditis. One death is too many. One. We have 21,000 cases of myocarditis and climbing in the United States that the CDC has verified. One was too many. Under no circumstances, under any circumstances, should a young person ever receive one of these vaccines let alone ever be pressured to receive a vaccine, let alone ever be mandated to take a vaccine. This is crystal clear. The FDA agrees. There can be no controversy over this. We are seeing unprecedented numbers of athletes dying on the field in Europe. Unprecedented. Of these cardiac arrests, half of them don't come back. We now have a report out of the Heart Group in the UK where actuarial mortality for those under age 15, mortality in the UK is higher than expected.
And I am concerned about our children. I'm concerned about all of those effects. Brain, heart, blood coagulation, reproductive system, immunologic system, and furthermore, they're not at risk for this virus. Why are we doing this? And mandating these vaccines for children just breaks my heart.
This is what we get when I investigate. I mean, this isn't to do with this, but this is after a couple of years trying to get information out of another agency, and we finally get the information, and it's all redacted. This is how the federal government, the agencies, comply with congressional oversight.
This dose that was tested in a major trial, which made corticosteroids the standard of care worldwide, and I also want to give praise to Senator Johnson. You know, Senator Johnson invited me to give testimony in the Senate in May of 2020. And I remember my first conversation with him when he reached out. He was so enthusiastic about hearing about the work that Dr. Marek and myself were doing, that we were putting out protocols and we were trying to treat this disease. You know, and he said he couldn't understand why the system wasn't reacting, why the entire system wasn't reacting the way we were. And I remember he told me, I want the doctors to take their gloves off. And they're not. They were sitting idly by the bedside. Institutions were paralyzed, waiting for randomized controlled trials to be done. And then finally, a randomized control. And at that time, I testified to the world that corticosteroids were critical in the treatment of this disease. Nothing happened until a trial came out 8 weeks later and proved the life-saving properties of corticosteroids. But that dose that was tested was ridiculous. It was the lowest dose. And the dose that's being used helps the few and fails the many.
I want to personally thank you. In the past, medical schools and conferences would take place. We debate how to treat these kind of diseases. And, you know, I it's kind of strange that this meeting has to take place in the U.S. Senate. You know, given the current state of affairs, that's where we are. But in the past, we would think that somehow the FDA, the CDC, the NIH, we would have basically maybe a message board, exchange ideas. And I really want to reach out and say thank you for what you've done to Dr. McCullough and Dr. Risch, who initially set all of this up. You know, the extreme censorships and attacks have led us to come to this place. And so I want to just thank you for what you've done. You've really pushed this all forward, you've been yourself become a researcher and a scientist over those last 2 years, so thank you very much.
These are highly qualified individuals. They speak from experience. We've got to fix this problem. We can't let this continue. We can't let it happen in the future. So again, thank all of you for coming. Thank you for being doctors, for being nurses, for being academicians, for being medical researchers. And thank all of you for viewing this. Share this with your friends. God bless you all. Thank you.